Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. Thanks for joining us today. This is Renee, and today we are going to talk about a couple different things. Shelley has done some research in regard to a new hearing device, which I'm excited to have her share with everybody. I'm also going to bring Shelley into the show, but first I want to give everybody an update on Jahi McMath, something that I actually had a search for because it's not just out there being told to everybody, but I think it's something we should all be aware of. Good morning, Shel.
Good morning, Rainey.
How you doing?
I'm doing good.
Nice and brisk out there this morning for us Floridians.
Quite, it's very windy. It's actually kind of exhilarating. I like it.
Well, our pets, well, I don't know about Lily, the cat. She's more interested in getting into my recliner in the living room and staying nice and cozy. But the dog, I mean, he is like, he actually comes and gets you and tries to pull you outside to play. It's very funny. So he's loving it. So last night, I said to my husband, I said, you know, I've been in and out a lot. The stuff that I'm doing here the past few days has kept me pretty busy during the day. And I've done a little bit of research at night to see if I could find anything about Jahi. And there's been nothing on the normal news, and except the last the last thing I heard was last week, and that was about the fact that she was still with us as far as the parents are concerned, but that she was, you know, her body had taken the toll of not receiving any kind of nourishment for all these days. But there's still status quo. So I researched a little bit last night, and I thought there must be something about this. I mean, you know, all the media was crazy over it, and now all of a sudden there's nothing. So I did a little bit of research, and indeed, I found something that I was already aware of, but I didn't know that it had manifested into a bit of a monster. And that is the feedback from people, us, the kind of comments that are being said on a lot of these different sites that tell the story are really kind of awful. So this guy, John Horgan, he's from the San Mateo County Times, which I guess is in California. But I want to read this real quick and talk about it before we talk about your subject this morning. The ongoing sad saga of Jahi McMath has had more than its share of tragic nuances, brutal public disputes, and legal machinations. I've never even heard that word. I guess it's the machinery in the legality department, but I never heard it said that way, machinations. Mm-hmm. The whole episode, which is far from over, we await the virtually certain malpractice lawsuit, by the way, which you and I have talked about,
yeah,
has been painful to follow and very tough to watch it as it unfolds. One aspect of the unsettling case, which involves a 13-year-old Oakland girl who has been declared legally brain dead in the aftermath of a tonsillectomy, has been especially troubling. Some of the anonymous online comments about the girl, her family, her attorney, and others have been simply outrageous, disturbing in the extreme, and outright racist. Certainly not all of the electronic opinions have been unsympathetic, unsupportive, and unfeeling, without even a hint of empathy, but far too many have been. These have focused on the girl's excessive weight, her mother's role in the matter, her family's African-American ethnicity, and its perceived level of education, economic status, and insurance coverage, the family's motives, and other factors. It has been depressing and a real eye-opener to watch such venom, and it bears on something that needs to be said. Unless you have walked in that family's shoes, you do not have any idea what those folks are going through. Those of us who have watched a hospitalized son or daughter struggle to survive as modern technology keeps a youngster alive can sympathize. There might be nothing worse than seeing your own offspring lying helpless in an intensive care unit, and there's little you can do to make his or her situation better. It's all in the hands of the doctors, the nurses, and the technicians. Mistakes are made. Some of them are irreversible. For the parents, the hospital room, whether it's in the ICU or otherwise, becomes an entire little world unto itself. Nothing else matters. Not the weather, not the stock market, politics, whatever. It's all irrelevant. The entire focus is on the child. So unless you have personal experience in dealing with such a horrific situation, it would be prudent and fair to cut Jahi's mother, family, and supporters some slack. We all can argue about whether postponing indefinitely what will surely be an inevitable decision to accept the reality of Jahi's death is wise and responsible. But at the very least, we ought to respect the magnitude of that looming reality. An uneasy moment. During a recent memorial event for her late father, Margaret Soden Appenheimer related a personal story that resonated with the gathering of some 150 people assembled in Pacifica. She noted that her dad, the late Jim Soden, had been her teacher when she attended Terra Nova High School in the coastal community. That could make things a bit uneasy at times, she said. There was always a possibility of a perception of favoritism. Once, when she received an A grade on a project, her father announced each student's grade. She blanched. Later, her dad stated, "If you can't get an A from your father, who are you going to get it from?" Good point. That's the end of that commentary. But for me, because I've been there twice, more on lighter notes, I have certainly been in a touch-and-go situation on several occasions in my life. Four with children. So there isn't anything quite like it. There isn't anything quite like the part that he reads that the room, the hospital room, all of that becomes your world. And I mean that in every sense of the word. You forget whether it's dark out, light out, cold out, warm out. Your head doesn't even go there. I remember one time leaving the hospital after Mike got hurt, and it had been the first time in 4 days, and I got in the car and I thought, I feel like I'm in a dream. I was driving right. My car, and I was going through the motions. I stopped at a light. And I'm sitting at the light, and I thought, I don't even remember stopping at this light. And here mm-hmm. I sit.
Yeah.
So you disconnect from the rest of your life. And the comments, remember I read some one day when we first started going into this story. and it's awful. It's really, really awful. I cannot understand us. People. I mean, what are we thinking? It doesn't even make sense to me that people would think that that is all right. When I posted this commentary, I posted it on my Facebook page last night, and I wrote, "Can anyone understand the lack of empathy, the unkind judgment, the cold and uncaring reaction to the plight of this family? Everyone gets a turn in the circle of attention and judgment. Remember, karma may be participating." And I mean that. I don't know what we're all thinking. I mean, all the things that you and I talk about on this show in regard to bullying and being unkind to other people. First of all, the simple passing of judgment in your mind, you should be ashamed of.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't be something that you share, especially on our extensive opportunity to share our thoughts now with things like Facebook and Twitter and all of the above. You should be ashamed of those thoughts. I know that we all have them. I know that when you see somebody who's drunk as can be and can't even stand up, before you say anything to your own self. Remember, that could be you or someone you love. Before you say something, when you see somebody who's incredibly obese and think, oh, my God, they must eat like a pig, they may not. Or when you see somebody standing on a street corner, we read all the stories about the people who beg on street corners. The one guy you and I talked about one day that said, I'm not going to kid you, I need some money for beer.
Yep.
You know,
right.
So okay. So, you know, give it to him or don't give it to him. But it's none of your business why he's there, how he got there, or anything else. If you don't want to give him any money, don't give it to him.
Exactly.
Right?
And the whole thing is that judgment, like anger, okay, injures us. And people don't understand that. This is part of the research I'm doing right now into the section of my book on the psychology of happiness. And one of the things I learned is that when you are when you're critical of other people, when you're judgmental of other people, that particular emotion is actually diminishing to you. People don't realize when they give in to judgments, they're actually harming themselves, and it comes from a sense of denial, because usually people who are well-adjusted, who are comfortable with their lives, feel more compassion and less judgment, okay? When they're looking at somebody who's made decisions in life that brought about bad results, they're not judgmental of them. They're not saying, oh, you know, how stupid that person is, or how irresponsible, you know, or this and that, on and on and on. They'll say, oh, wow, you don't feel bad for people that make bad decisions, because basically they brought their own circumstances. It should definitely feel compassion. Feeling sorry and feeling compassion are two different emotions. Feeling compassion means you know this person has to take responsibility for their own poor choices, but in the same token, you feel compassion for them in that it's not enjoyable to see anybody suffering. When you have people that start passing judgment, on some level, they're identifying with their own poor decisions and things. May not be a one-to-one situation, but it's a spinoff of hate. You can't be judgmental and not have some level of dislike for people. And that's not healthy, it's not natural, and it's coming from other things that you've developed through your lifetime. Just like being a racist or something like that. That is not natural to who we are. This is taught. This is developed through life experiences. And, I've never really been a judgmental person. I used to have anger issues, which at 55 years old now, I deal with life so much easier now that I've let go of all that. And I had started well over a decade and a half ago after I read that book, Peace Pilgrim. I just thought it was a brilliant book. And it really got my attention. If anybody has anger issues, I highly, highly recommend that book, Peace Pilgrim. It's just extraordinary. And I'm not even so sure that it's sold in the stores, because you can get it free from the Peace Pilgrim Foundation that's out in California. If you just Google Peace Pilgrim book, you'll see.
Isn't that the same book that Gornam used to give out?
I both used to give it. A little blue pamphlet that was excellent on the book. Gornam used to give them out, and I used to give them out when I did my lecture, because it's very profound the way it talks about being happy, you know, and you are really in control of that. And when you're being judgmental of people, when you're hating people, when you're not allowing yourself to forgive, when you're not making the choice to forgive, when you're not making the choice to feel compassion, because these are choices, all right, you are actually diminishing your own happiness. You cannot write that kind of venom. I read some of those comments too, by the way. I'm glad you did started the show with that this morning. That is awful that people allow their minds to go there. It's certainly not healthy for them to entertain those type of thoughts. That type of venom comes from anger, not compassion. And nothing can heal this planet other than love. And all the different aspects of love. Compassion and hope come from love. judgment, anger, that all comes from fear. Fear is a destructive emotion, and all the elements of fear, which include hate, anger, and emotions like that. So when you feel yourself going there, you should do an emotional check and say, all right, I'm probably not looking at this right because I shouldn't be feeling anything destructive towards these people. You know, even if the parents made a bad choice, you know what? They made the bad choice under the direction of a doctor.
Well, it's not just about their choices or right or wrong, just like it's not about the choices somebody makes to get themselves into a place where they where they're struggling continuously. It's called life, and it is what it is. And you make a decision based on the facts that you are privy to at the point in time that you're aware of them. You don't get every decision you make, you don't get to Google. You don't get to, oh, give me a minute, let me go run in and see what 50,000 other people think about this, and then I'll make a decision. No, you have to go from your brain and your heart and hope that it connects enough to make a good decision. But the point is with people like this is where do you get off? And you're right, we've talked about this many times, how sick it makes you as a person to harbor hatred and anger and always feel like somebody owes you something or always feel like you're the one that's working the hardest, you're the one that's doing the most. You know, when you're with kids, if so-and-so's turn to take out the garbage, I took out the garbage twice this week. How many times did they take out the garbage? I don't know, but I took it out twice. Well, how do you know they didn't take it out three times? because you're being so self-centered that you're not paying any attention to what somebody else is doing, just to what you're doing.
Well,
and
like
that's
I worked
good in some respects, but
where,
not
where
in
people,
everything.
Right, I worked at a company once where people in one department were like, "Oh, we work harder than any other department," and then every other department felt the same way. So we had this general manager who was brilliant, came in, and he made everybody switch for like a couple of hours in the morning, just long enough not to hurt the business, but long enough so that each other department would see the hecticness that the other departments went through, because everybody thought they did more than anything else, and the other departments just kind of like skated on. I'll tell you, each group gained total respect for the group that they went into. They didn't have to do it in every department, because once they experienced it in one department, they got it. Now, everybody here is working their hardest. Everybody here has stress and hectic pace in the morning and all that kind of stuff. And it solved the bickering, because I guess this GM just got sick and tired of everybody with a, you know, like, I'm working harder than everybody else attitude, and he wanted to give them all a little bit of a taste of reality. I thought it was brilliant. And I've never really heard of anybody doing that again, but I just thought it was such a brilliant move. And it worked.
Well, I mean, the whole point is that there's a million old sayings, adages about walking in somebody else's shoes. There's
right,
a reason that's so prevalent. There's a reason for that.
It was the only time I had ever seen it, and I thought it was brilliant.
Yeah, but the reason that it's been around for so long is because it's one of those truths that you can't avoid. You never know what it's like to walk in someone else's shoes. Never. You don't know their own personal stuff, their challenges, their problems, their gifts. You don't know any of that stuff. So to judge on face value is really shows lack of any kind of thought or intelligence, because we aren't all the same, and because it looks like, oh, I could do that, you know, or I would do that better, or I would do this, you know, please. But the saddest part about this story with Jahi is the fact that everybody thinks it's okay to pass judgment and to put, of course, you know, we've talked about this before too, to go on Facebook or Google or any site and say, my name is Annie Fanny, and write some horrible thing. Nobody's ever going to know who it is. So you're not facing any kind of consequences. You just get to run your mouth. You know,
I
will tell you this. My name is Maureen Brewer. If I ever say anything, you may come to me and ask me why I said it. because I won't say anything that I don't feel strongly about, and I won't say anything that's going to be intentionally mean about anybody else. I just won't, and neither should you.
That's
so I want to, even though, as you can see, this has me incensed, did most of the night, because I had already read some of those things, and I thought people probably stopped, you know, because it wasn't so much in the media. But, I mean, there's still hundreds of comments, and all of them, I mean, still talking about this little girl being obese. You know, and somebody's saying, oh, she weighs 200 pounds. How do they know how much she weighs?
First of all, she doesn't look 200 pounds in the picture. She does look overweight.
Of course not.
But you know what? My niece Cheyenne just shot up. She just must have grown. I don't know how many inches, but she was like up to the top of my head, and now she's taller than me, like in like 6 months. And she was chubby there for a while, to the point that she was getting a little teased, you know, by some of her friends and stuff. But she was a little pudge there for a while, not very, very overweight, but she was definitely overweight. But when all of a sudden she went through this growth spurt, she thinned right out, you know. And I'm not saying that that's the issue with this young girl. But a lot of times when kids that are a little chubby get picked on, you know, and then the next year they gain a few inches and bam, and it's that weight was just waiting to get redistributed. So it's just kind of like what kids go through. Some kids go through a skinny, gangly phase. Some kids go through a chubby phase, but it doesn't mean that that's going to be their future. And the other thing is that when you understand how many of the foods that are out there today, you see all these commercials that are out there, any products with regular corn in it, corn that does not say GMO, if you buy any corn product and it does not say on the package non-GMO corn, you really, really run the risk of having weight issues, because regular corn that's been genetically modified is being modified for grain for cows, and it's been modified to make cows gain weight faster. So now you're feeding this same corn to human beings, and it has the same effect on them. It increases your appetite, and it makes it slows your metabolism down so that you gain weight. So, but, you know, who tells anybody
that's another topic, though. So we're going to talk about GMOs and genetically modified
But my point
things
is,
like that.
Who knows what this child's diet was? She could have been eating what they thought was a healthy diet, and her body responded to it. It might not even have been anything that anybody was doing wrong based on what they were aware of. And child obesity in this country is at an epidemic. And one of the reasons is because of the food. What I'm trying to explain is that people have no right criticizing this family because they don't understand the bigger picture here. They should feel compassion for the family.
Exactly. But it shouldn't have anything to do with what they look like, shouldn't have anything to do with anything other than caring enough to have a feeling of sadness for them, hope for them that they can get past this. The decisions they're making are not any of our business. You got an answer? You got a way for them to be able to get through this without doing the things that they're doing? Well, then maybe we'd like to hear about that. But if you don't have anything, you know, Bambi, Thumper's mother, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. And people should live by that. They should live by that because nobody cares what you say at the end of the day.
I just want to make one comment, and then we can move on, unless you have more comments to make with this. But what you just said, where if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all, but it's, you know, you can voice a criticism of something, but make it a constructive criticism, not just vile and nastiness. That doesn't help anybody. All it does is perpetuate, you know, anger and nastiness. You know, if you have a criticism, you say, wow, you know, the reason this happened to this little girl is because she was so heavy, it's okay to say something like that, but say it constructively. You know, say, my heart goes out to this family. I'm wondering how much of this had to do with her weight. You know, for all of you out there who have children that are suffering with weight issues, this may be a wake-up call to maybe start looking into helping your child to get in a better place health-wise, and let's all pray for this family. So you've still addressed what your concern was, that maybe this had something to do with the fact that they let her get too heavy, or maybe there were things that they could have done that they weren't doing because they didn't know, okay? But at the same token, you're still showing compassion for this family and wanting good for them. You know, let's all pray for the family and hope that their daughter becomes okay through all this or something like that, you know? That would be an appropriate comment to make, still putting your two cents in there, but doing it in a constructive way, not in a hateful way.
Yes, but the other big point, those are all true facts, and yes, thinking about what you say is important, but let's don't forget that unless somebody's asked you, none of your business, and unless somebody's asked for your advice, you shouldn't offer it unless they ask you for it.
Well, that and I don't agree with. I don't agree with. I think when things happen in life, we're all involved in it, and there could be thousands and thousands of other families facing a similar situation to this family. So if you have a constructive observation about what happened to them that may be helpful to other families, I mean, that I think is a good thing. I don't believe in sticking my head in the sand. What I'm saying I'm agreeing with you that you shouldn't put anything out there that's not kind, that's not helpful, that's just meant to be mean and nasty, that serves no purpose at any time ever in society whatsoever. But for you to put out a piece of helpful advice, all right, for other people that might be going through the same thing, and even for the family maybe to get through their trauma, that's fine from my standpoint. I think it's helpful to post helpful information.
Address the family, and you say, look, I have some ideas. If you'd like to hear them, I just want to help, call me or ask me or invite me in, not just posting them on sites. We have a guest that would like to come in, and I suspect that they may want to talk about this. So before we move on, I'm going to invite them in. Good morning. This is Rini.
Good morning, Rini. Carol Ann here.
I thought I recognized that phone number.
Well, this is actually from my home phone, but I I got in a little bit late, but so I didn't really. I understand that there's a situation with a family being any kind of hatred, any kind of derogatory, beating down of the human beings always alerts my attention. And I as I'm listening to you and Shelley, I'm thinking of something that only Shelley would know, and that is the addicted to the obvious, how we judge people as soon as we see them, the outside, and we have no idea, who they are on the inside and what their, troubles in life or what their victories or whatever have been. There's that already, judging. And, my partner's an African American. I live in still the South, and I myself have felt some of the heat from people that have, anger on, but it doesn't even go there as far as race. It's whether people are overweight or underweight or whatever it is. Compassion is always my answer. And I just wanted to just say I'm here, I'm listening, and always good to learn and how we can have more compassion for the human race and for people. It's always my answer anyway, compassion and kindness, And that doesn't mean that I'm always there. Sometimes I have anger over other people's anger. I just wanted to chime in here and tell you that I'm with you and listening to a very important issue.
And I agree with you, and I think we are all on the same page. We have different ways of expressing ourselves, which is a part of human nature. But I do believe that we are all pretty much like-minded. We're all friends, and we get the turmoil involved in a personal trauma because we've all been there. But to just randomly shoot out, I want to thank you for chiming in this morning, Carol Ann. It's nice to hear from you.
Oh, good to be heard. Thank you.
Well, shall it tell us this morning about, first of all, let me say, let's us and any of you listening send out some real positive energy to this poor family, because now it appears as though, you know, this has snowballed into something that they probably no longer have any directional cues. They are just trying to do what they think is best.
Okay.
And let them know that we understand that they are in an awful, awful, the next few weeks are going to, and our hearts go out to them. So, but I want to let Shell talk about this this new innovation in regard to better hearing, which is an issue for many people. And short of having a megaphone and one of those great big hearing horns, there's a lot of wonderful stuff going on out there. So you want to fill us in, Shell?
Sure. Yeah, what I had heard of this actually years ago. A TV show on it a few days ago, and it kind of, you know, I got my interest in it going again. It's called cochlear implants. Now, I don't know how long they've been around. I know that it's been quite a while. None of these articles say when they got started, but I think they've actually been around for a couple of decades. But at any rate, or at least 10 years, but I'm not sure when they were discovered. So I came across, when I Googled them, I came across a whole bunch of websites. One of them is from the U.S. Department of Human Services, and there's actually a link at the bottom, which I'll share with everybody in a few minutes, with a phone number for people that want to get additional information, you know, how to find a doctor who does this, things like that. I'm going to read through this article because it's just, like, very, very good information. And at the very, very top, when you go to this particular website, there's a lot of static on the line, Reen. Can you hear
me?
Yeah,
there really is. Yeah, I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is. I'm hearing it, too. I took myself off speakerphone because I thought that might have been it. But will you spell the name of this device?
Yes, it's Cochlear, C-O-C-H-L-E-A-R.
Okay.
And then the word implant, cochlear implant.
Okay.
ACA,
yep.
Are you still on the line with us, hon?
Yes,
I am.
Yeah. Can you try muting your phone for a minute? I just want to see if maybe we're getting feedback from your area.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sure.
Don't go away. Just let's see if that clears it for a quick sec. Are you there, Reen?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, yeah. So, all right. So is CA still with us?
Yeah, she's still with us.
Okay, yeah. She might have been moving around or something and not realized it. So, all right.
Mm-hmm.
Stay with us, CA.
Okay.
Okay. But at any rate, so what happened is on the very top of the article, there's actually a picture of what the implant looks like. It's like a drawing, an artist's rendition. It shows the outside of the ear, and then it shows, you know, like going into the head, and it shows where all the devices are actually put inside the person's body. So it's very clear. You can see it's actually several components, a transmitter, a speech processor, a receiver stimulator, and then there's and this is all very fine, like, you know, very, very small, obviously. There's a little bit of a line, I guess it's some sort of an electrical wire, that goes to the inside of the head where all the parts of our eardrum are and, you know, the hearing device. And this little electrode array is implanted, I guess it's on the other side of the eardrum, all right? And they show the whole thing here, and everything is very small. So then it starts here. A cochlear implant is a small, complex electronic device that can help to provide a sense of sound to a person who is profoundly deaf or severely hard of hearing. The implant consists of an external portion that sits behind the ear and a second portion that is surgically placed under the skin. And they show that in the figure on the top. You see that part of it's clipped around the ear and part of it's like right inside the skin there in front of the ear.
An implant has the following parts: a microphone, which picks up the sound from the environment, a speech processor, which selects and arranges sounds picked up by the microphone, a transmitter and receiver stimulator, which receives signals from the speech processor and convert them into electric impulses, and an electrode array, which is a group of electrodes that collect the impulses from the stimulator and sends them to different regions of the auditory nerve. And this is fascinating to me that the technology, we even figured out how to do this kind of stuff. How does a cochlear implant work? A cochlear implant is very different from a hearing aid. Hearing aids amplify sound, which means they just make sounds louder. For somebody who can now not pick up lower sounds or medium sounds, a hearing aid is just making it louder for them. Okay, so hearing aids amplify sound so that they may be detected by damaged ears. Cochlear implants bypass damaged portions of the ear and directly stimulate the auditory nerve. So you're not even using your ear when you get a cochlear implant. The cochlear implant is basically bypassing the inner workings of your ear. Signals generated by the implant are sent by way of the auditory nerve to the brain, which recognizes the signals as sound. Hearing through a cochlear implant is different from normal hearing and takes time to learn and relearn. However, it allows many people to recognize warning signals, understand other sounds in the environment, enjoy a conversation in person or even by telephone. So I find that interesting, the cochlear implants, people who receive this can actually use a telephone. Children and adults who are deaf or severely hard of hearing can be fitted for cochlear implants. According to the FDA, as of December 2012, approximately 324,000 people worldwide have received implants. In the United States, roughly 58,000 adults and 38,000 children have received them. So you see that that number is just under 100,000, which means that all over the world, there's been an additional, 224,000 done in other countries. Adults who have lost all or most of their hearing later in life often can benefit from cochlear implants. They learn to associate the signal provided by an implant with sounds they remember. This often provides recipients with the ability to understand speech solely by listening through the implant without requiring any visual cues such as those provided by lip reading or sign language. Cochlear implants coupled with intensive post-implantation therapy can help young children to acquire speech, language, and social skills. Most children who receive implants are between 2 and 6 years old. Early implantation provides exposure to sounds that can be helpful during the critical period when children learn speech and language skills. In the year 2000, FDA lowered the age of eligibility to 12 months. Wow, I didn't read the whole thing last night. The FDA lowered the age of eligibility to 12 months for one type of cochlear implant. And then this continues going on. So I'm actually going to give people this site. They can go on and read a little bit more. I thought it was very, very informative. And one of the things I found interesting in one of the other articles I read, this was an article written by an AVT. An AVT is an audiovisual therapist. And this woman, Ellen A. Rhodes, she put this article up here in 2000. So I was talking 14 years ago, so we know they've been around for a while. She had worn a hearing aid her entire life and had a cochlear implant and then wrote this article after she became a therapist, a certified AVT, to kind of give people the pros and cons of hearing aids and the pros and cons of implants. And she is a cochlear implant recipient. So it was very interesting because you can tell she's talking very clinically in a lot of what she said. But one of the things I found fascinating is that there is a lag time before they stimulate the cochlear implant. It takes a month, according to what she says here. Now, this was written 15 years ago, so this might be different now. But at the time she wrote this article, there was a 30-day wait time after the surgery to stimulate the device. So people would actually have no hearing during that time until everything recovered, and then they would simulate the device and test it. And again, like I said, I don't know if that's still the case now because of how old this article is. There's a ton of information. Do you want to ask any questions before I go on with anything else?
Yeah, I do. When we talked about when you said that they went back to 12 months now, which is awesome because, of course, we've talked about that very recently. The first year of our lives is when we learn mm-hmm. the most. And that, of course, makes so much sense to be able to have something like this done for an infant who cannot hear because of I know that they're attuned to vibrations and things like that, but when you do something like that as a child, even if you do it at 6 years old, does that have to be changed as you grow?
They don't address that in any of the articles. That's an interesting point. She does talk about the fact that sometimes the implants fail, and that's when she was talking about this month lag time to redo the procedure. Because basically, if you had partial hearing, but it was really, really bad, and you decided mm-hmm. to go with a cochlear implant, during the recovery time, you would have no hearing because what they're doing is they're disabling, they're bypassing the normal ear completely. You're not using your own ear anymore, and they're attaching this device to the auditory nerve. So the inner workings of your ear are now completely bypassed. They don't work at all. And so some people have no hearing at all, and obviously so there's no effect to them. But some people have some sense of hearing, and during the implantation process until they activate it, now they have no hearing. So a lot of people just do one ear at a time. And I think that's still the case now, that they're only doing one ear at a time.
This would generate a lot of questions, I think. Go ahead, Carol Ann.
I just wanted to say that my father's sister has a cochlear implant, and it's very, very successful and very, you know, at the time, really, you know, different and amazing that she could have this. I don't know if I can. I mean, I can call her, talk to her if there's something to add here, but we always thought that, you know, wow, it was such an amazing, thing that she could have, the hearing that she could have, because in my father's side, you know, my dad's family, very much, you know, my grandmother was completely deaf. There was, you know, so this was amazing for her to be able to have.
Wow, yeah.
Was your aunt born deaf, or did something happen to her that she lost?
As she got older, it became, she just got worse, and she's a very young 75 years old. She's a very young.
When did she have the implant?
It's been, let's see, 6 years ago.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
Yeah, because one of the things they talk about here is that cochlear implants are used for some people that have profound deafness. It's also used for people that had normal hearing but lost it from either accident or illness over time. So there's a lot of different causes. I mean, mm-hmm. there's a lot of different reasons why there is deafness. And I know that the cochlear implants aren't for everybody. So that's why it didn't really go in here, the screening process, but they say that certain people are eligible for cochlear implants. So that's why you can go in for more information from this website I was talking about. I just read the general information to give everybody an idea of it is. But if you know somebody who is suffering from profound deafness from either illness or accident or something like that, or you know somebody who had a child who was born deaf, it's certainly something worthwhile for them to look into. The other thing they talked about in these articles was the fact that some people's insurance don't cover this procedure, and it's very expensive, and there's a lot of therapy afterwards, or this training, they call it, because the cochlear implant does not send the same type of signal as normal hearing does. So it's a close proximity to sounds, but especially spoken words, people who get the cochlear implants actually have to learn how to recognize speech. Now, somebody who's already had hearing It's easier for them because they're already, it's just different, okay? But somebody who's never heard before in their lives, they have to understand what these sounds mean. So it's a different training process for somebody who's been deaf all along and is now hearing for the first time than for somebody who's heard their whole lives, and now they just have to understand the little bit of a distortion, you know?
Right.
Well, and we have to remember that if you've never had hearing, I mean, that would be a whole new learning adventure. I can't even, I'm sitting here trying to figure out how you would even do that. And one of the things that I've always heard from the friends that we have personally, actually the three of us know a couple of these people, their hearing is impaired, and a couple of them wear very expensive hearing aids, the kind that you barely see. Our very favorite funny story is the time that one of our very close friends couldn't understand why her hearing aid wasn't working, and in the middle of the day she looked and she'd put a Hippocrates enzyme in her ear instead of her hearing aid. I said, well, you know, it might have helped you digest the words you were hearing a little bit better, and we all laughed about it, but it's very tiny. But most of my friends that have any kind of hearing impairment, one of the complaints that they make to me is they cannot separate the outside noises to hone in on what they're trying to hear. In other words, they have the kind of problem where, like, if you're in traffic, and your windows are down on your car, beeping horns, wind blowing, all that kind of thing is one of the things that impairs them. So with the
one of the things that I just watched that kind of stimulated my interest in this, you know, I told you I watched the court shows from time to time, and I was watching People's Court with Judge Million, and there was actually a case on there with a young girl who had a cochlear implant and this guy who was doing a documentary on them. Then they were having a contract dispute, and he was trying to do a documentary about this young girl. And she had a double implant, and the girl was talking, when they were talking to the mother, she said that this is something new, and that's why they were doing this documentary, that in the past they would only do one ear. Now they're doing both ears. I think they have to do them one at a time, though. They're doing both ears. And this gives cochlear implant recipients now the ability to locate where the sound is coming from, where exactly what you were talking about beforehand, they would have the ability to hear, but because they were only hearing from one ear, they couldn't place where the sound was coming from. So they would hear a sound, but they wouldn't know if it was coming behind them, so it wouldn't help them directionally. And then now with getting the double implants, it gives them more normal hearing because now they can actually tell the direction where the sound is coming from. So I thought that was a very interesting point, and that's what piqued my curiosity about this again, because I had heard about this a long time ago, but it was kind of like a passing thing, and then this kind of rejuvenated my interest in this subject.
So does it then, I mean, did you read anything about it being, we have no hearing whatsoever, and you get these implants in both ears. There's a transitional time that you just said where they have to learn, and if they heard originally, then it's easier for them to make this transition. But if they've been without the ability to hear since birth, and say now they're 13 years old, and they get what kind of time are we talking about? What kind of education are we talking about to help them learn this? Does it go into that much detail, Shel?
No, it does talk about the learning process. None of the articles that I read got that specific. This one that was written by Ellen Rhodes, and again, keep in mind that this was written 15 years ago, so the technology, I'm sure, has improved quite a lot since then. Her article came up as one of the first hits, though, so obviously there's been a lot of traffic on it. But when she talks about the disadvantages of cochlear implants, and it's just so that people are aware what may happen, she's not trying to discourage anybody because the whole article is very positive about it. But she said that sometimes people with cochlear implants will hear static or they'll feel pressure They can't do certain types of activities that other people can do, like they wouldn't be able, and again, this is 15 years ago, so this may be different now, but at that point, you couldn't be a scuba diver and have a cochlear implant because you can't have pressure on the device. You can't get MRIs because this device is in your head. You know, in MRIs, you can't have any metal. Certain types of sports that are impact sports, such as football, so you would not be able to be a football player and have a cochlear implant. So there are certain things that you're limited in engaging because of that. And then you have things like some people with the implants complain that they have a loud buzzing noise whenever they're in close proximity to neon lights, and it will interfere with the speech signal. So if they're standing, like if they go to a nightclub or something like that, and they're around certain types of things, all of a sudden now they can't hear people again, because the neon lights interfere with the signal. So I'm wondering if any of these issues that she talks about, and she has a lot of things that are positive, but then she goes, you know, she's just trying to tell people these are things you might experience. So then she goes into some of the things that people have complained about with cochlear implants. So I'm wondering if any of these have been improved upon over the last 15 years, because I would tend to think they have been. They might have been able to get things that would not allow any interference with the signal and things like that. So, she talks here about programming issues dependent on mapper or audiologist. So evidently there's a person called an audiologist, which the recipient has to go through training with, and it says programming issues. Now, this is under the disadvantages of cochlear implants. Travel and time costs if mapper is not in the child's area. Mapping session is time-consuming, boring, and can be expensive. Should be reprogrammed annually, so more often for young children. Programming is not always easy, especially for establishing the comfort levels. Changing from one program to another oftentimes involves a temporary setback in one's discrimination of understanding different tones. Adapting to change strategies is difficult for many people. So now this young girl who was on the show had the cochlear implant only a few years earlier, and she was doing fine. She was able to converse with the judge and things like that, and you just snap the device off, the one that's on the outside of the head, you just snap it off because the judge asked her something, so you saw her reach behind her ear and take it off. And she held it in her hand so that the judge could see the size of it. And then the judge asked her a question, and the young girl smiled at her like, hey, I just took my device off. And the judge actually laughed at herself because she goes, oh, I'm sorry. She said, put it back on. Because the girl could see that the judge was talking to her, but she'd already taken the devices off the shoulder, so it was kind of funny. But like I said, this is 15 years ago. At that time, there were issues with electrical interference. And in the training process that, at least for young children, had to be redone on an annual basis, I guess, until they got. So I don't know if this is a lifelong thing. They don't really go into that kind of specifics. But these are good questions. And when you read these articles, it will raise the questions you need to ask before making this decision.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's for sure. And I think it warrants us saying that everything like this is, you know, depends on the person, depends on what the person's challenge is. And the biggest thing is to get the right kind of input and get input from several different arenas. Obviously, nobody wants to go through life not being able to hear. But again, one of the things that I have always heard, the complaint that I hear from the people that I am friends with that have difficulty in hearing, is the outside noises. And when you said neon lights, have you ever been really close to a neon light? It buzzes continuously.
Oh, yeah.
It's,
I mean,
like,
without
it's
a
like
cochlear
you're next to a beehive.
For that. Sure.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing, of course, that I would worry about is air travel, being in a pressurized airplane.
Thing about airplane travel, but they did say about scuba diving. Now, in scuba diving, you're under a lot more pressure.
Yeah.
So you can get it wet, obviously, because she didn't mention that swimming is not permitted. It's anything that causes impact or severe pressure. But she did not. Now, obviously, you're not under the same type of pressure in an airplane, although you are under some pressure, as scuba diving can put massive pounds, PSI, on the body, and that's where the bends come from and stuff, if people try to come up too quickly. So you're getting a lot more pressure on the body than in being in an airplane, although in an airplane you feel like you're getting more, but you're really not more than scuba diving, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But be into it. And like I said, this article, as helpful as it is, I want to keep, pointing out to the fact that I thought it was an exceptional article, and it can raise a lot of questions to make sure, has any of this been improved on? Are these still the accurate pros and cons today? But like I said, because it came up as one of the first hits, and there's been a lot of hits on it, you can see that it's been read a lot.
I think it's a positive thing that Carol Ann can tell us about somebody who just had it done 6 years ago. And has great results. And of course,
but what I was reading in the beginning,
Change Your Life,
on the current site, that was updated in November of 2013. So that's all very, very recent information. The site that actually has the little drawing that shows what the device is and where it's installed. That's actually on the government site, and that was, like I said, the last update is November of 2013. So this is very, very recent information. And again, if anybody wants to research that, it's the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services National Institute of Health site. If you just Google cochlear implants, this will come up, all right? The call letters is NIH, which stands for National Institute of Health. And then you go to the tab for – actually, it opens up in this tab, so you don't have to search for it. And it has all this wonderful information about cochlear implants. And there's actually an 800 number on here for – there's two toll-free numbers. One is a voice, and one is set up for people – I don't know what TTY stands for, but I know it's for people that –
It means hearing impaired. It means hearing impaired.
Oh, but I don't know what the letters stand for. I know that it means hearing impaired.
Oh, I don't remember. Mm-hmm.
TTY is an acronym.
I don't remember.
Okay. So the voice – toll-free number is 800-241-1044. That's if you are a hearing person and you want to get information about this. If you are a hearing impaired person, that toll-free number is 800-241-1055. And that gets you directly into the government site, and it's called the NIDCD, which means National Institute on Deafness and Other Communication Disorders, NIDCD. It's a division under the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and that's what those phone numbers are. It's an information clearinghouse, so you can call those numbers, and they can tell you other resources that are out there, other publications and things like that. And so I just thought it was a very
See if you could – sometime this morning, share that information with me on Facebook, and I'll keep it on my main page for a while in case somebody is driving and can't, take down the numbers. But we are out of time. I want to share another lovely sentiment that comes from my friend Joel Smith. It's a quote from Charles Dickens, and I think it kind of pertains to a little bit of the stuff that we talked about with Shahi this morning. Have a heart that never hardens, and a temper that never tires, and a touch that never hurts. And I think those are very wise words to live by. So I want to thank everybody, and I want to say tomorrow, of course, is recap day, and we never did our, because I had to take off Tuesday, we didn't do our Bullies to Buddies, so we'll be doing that again next week, and I think that's helping a few people. I've gotten a couple messages from people with young kids, and it's and some of the stuff that Izzy is teaching us has helped some people, which I love. So I want to thank you all. I think I have a sister-in-law with us this morning. Good morning, Linda. Thanks for tuning in. And Carol Ann, it's been a pleasure having you on the show this morning. And as usual, Shell, you did a great job. Thank you. And if anybody has any questions about that, they're more than welcome to either call us on the show tomorrow. Shell can update you if she has anything, or if you have any questions about anything that we talk about, don't hesitate to call. Everybody go out there and make it a great day today. God bless, and we'll be back tomorrow. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye, everyone. Speak to you in the morning.
Bye-bye.